Okay, hi, welcome to CSCIE 76 seminar called iPad Design Patterns. I think I know a couple of you guys. My name's Larry Earhart. I'm one of the teaching fellows in the class, and I have my own little design company. And while this topic, you know, iPad Design Patterns, is huge, and you could probably spend a good semester or at least a couple of hours more than we have going through this. The way I'm going to limit the discussion is to talk about my experience designing and building a couple iPhone apps that are out in the marketplace, and then a couple of iPad apps. And so I'm just really going to talk more about my personal experiences with that, like what works, what didn't, what I discovered was different about that. There are tons of design documents and materials out there on the internet and on the Apple site, so you should definitely peruse those around the human interface guidelines for the iPad to get to get other opinions as well. Before we jump into the agenda, I think I asked a couple people, does anybody have an iPad here besides JP? Has anybody used iPad apps? Okay, good. So I've got about an hour and 15 minutes worth of material. And so I invite you guys to ask questions or to provide feedback or comments during the discussion. If there's no discussion, I'll just go and keep talking right until the end. So it's up to you to kind of control what we do and discuss in today's session. But I'm really going to talk about three main areas. The first is, as I mentioned, around the design dimensions that I've come across in my work working on the iPad. I'm going to do a quick demo of an iPhone app and one of my iPad apps, and then talk specifically about some thematic comparisons or differences, you know, really summarizing at a high level what the big differences are between the user interface for an iPhone app versus an iPad app. Then I'm going to show you my take on Hangman, but for the iPad. So we're going to go through some code. I'm not going to type it. I'm not going to have you watch me type it, so I'm just going to show it and try to step us through it. The code is available on the website, so if you do have a PC, you can download it and take a look at it and follow along. And then finally, leave some time at the end for some other thoughts. Okay, so the first two things I want to do, as I mentioned, is go through a couple demos. So I'm going to start off with my iPhone app called My Energy Tips. Okay, that's not bad. Okay, so basically, My Energy Tips, I'm not going to talk too much about the functionality. I'm just going to talk about the design patterns that are in there. So the first thing to notice here is the modals in the iPhone are generally anything that's going to communicate something to the user, you know, more than a few bytes is going to be a full screen modal. So this is an example of that. It's got some text on it and a few buttons to help you kind of start off on your journey. But it's very limited, right, in terms of where you can go and what you can do based on that. And, of course, that's because of the screen size. The next design element that most data-driven iPhone apps, at least that I've seen, have is the combination of kind of table views, which I think we looked at in lecture, as well as the tab structure. And again, you know, it's designed to, you know, table view is a good way to present a lot of information in a structured format. Of course, you can scroll through it. In this case, I have some custom UI cell views, you know, that have a little icon that give a visual clue about what the row is about, and then the actual data. And then going along the bottom, you have the tabs, and then you even have a couple of views where you have tabs, almost a tab within tab structure. You know, in this case, this is a number of graphs, and you can select what kind of data you're looking at, or basically the presentation mode of that. So it's a kind of a double flow of tabs on the bottom and then tabs on the top. And that's pretty much, you know, there are a lot of other ways you can go, but the typical iPhone app will have some combination of those structures given the kind of the limited space that's available for you on the screen. And one more note here, just on the tables too. You'll notice a lot of iPhone apps, iTouch apps that at least require the user to enter data. You'll be really kind of driving through a lot of tables. You know, so digging down to get to the exact text entry or, you know, kind of working end of the app. So I kind of summarize there that you're pretty much following, you know, the out of the box iPhone design patterns. In most cases, you know, because of the limited space on the screen and, you know, the fact that those actually are really good design patterns when you're holding the, you know, device in your hand and basically kind of maneuvering it with your thumb, or maybe have two thumbs. So definitely, you know, thumb-oriented kind of interfaces. So that's, I think that's a fairly standard kind of approach to iPhone-based apps. And now I'm going to show my other app, which is for the iPad, which is called Masterpieces. And again, the content here is not the key part. I just want to talk a little bit more about the departure from the kind of the standard navigational frameworks that you're really allowed and afforded once you get involved with the iPad. And that's for some clear reasons. You have a ton more screen real estate. You have to use that real estate, but you don't want to overload that real estate with too much data, so you have to focus a lot more on kind of the design elements that surround whatever content you're presenting, whatever kinds of actions you're asking the user to do, because it's a very large screen. You can end up overwhelming the user quite easily. So let me open up Masterpieces then. This is an art-based game where you look at details from famous masterworks, not surprisingly, and try to guess what they are. But the first thing you'll notice is that, you know, we did a complete custom user interface here, and that was really driven by the fact that we wanted to, you know, present a, you know, not overwhelm the user with too much data and information, but still make the screen look visually appealing. And I find when I'm developing iPad apps that there's a lot of thought that has to go around the basic focus, right? Because you don't want to, as I said, overwhelm the user. So in this case, we have buttons that are essentially graphical elements. I find myself doing a lot with that. And then we also use popovers. We'll talk about how to build that, as opposed to kind of, you know, shifting the user's view away from the key dimensions of your view. Rather, you do more layering and overlays, I found, with popovers and split-screen views, et cetera. So that's an example here. We still use table views. This is a custom table view. Each row is a user. But again, you know, invest more time and energy in terms of, you know, formatting in a pleasing way the, you know, the actual cell, and then spacing it out properly around the screen so it's easy to see what you're supposed to be doing. So that's a table view structure, but it doesn't really look like a table view, you know, to the typical user. We're more leveraging kind of the background functionality just to handle the presentment of the buttons and the cells. In terms of the actual views that we laid out in here, again, you have the opportunity to have both functionality as well as text. So text becomes a much more important part of the views, because you can describe to users what they're going to do. And so we used a combination of kind of icons and text to help guide the user. And then we'll look at an actual UI here. Here again, you know, we're doing a couple things that obviously you can do on this that you couldn't do on the iPhone, is that, you know, kind of present content at the same time while you're requesting kind of input. So in this case, we have a painting, you know, painting detail on there. We did a lot of work with kind of the shading. I don't know if you can see it. Shading, so you can really make it a kind of visually attractive experience, translucent buttons, et cetera, some guidance to where you are. But then we're also able to have, you know, the buttons, you know, that are requesting the input right on that screen. And this is an example of something we're going to look at when we look at Hangman for the iPad, is the ability to kind of use your buttons as a way to kind of communicate information about what the user has done. Usually on an iPhone app, you know, the button is pressed and then it goes away. Right here, you can, since you have the real estate, you can leave the buttons on the screen and use them not only to collect user input and feedback, but also to then communicate back to that user, you know, whether the answer is right or wrong in this case, or some other kind of feedback. Okay, so, you know, content, buttons, and then feedback were what we were thinking of when we made these views. And then finally, the last type of view that I wanted to talk about, which is you'll find yourself perhaps looking at a lot more in the iPad or reading views, right? You know, it's obviously the iPad is very good for consuming media, and books and text are one of those. So one of the things I'm going to talk a little bit about later is some of the tips and tricks for how to present text-heavy views. And basically, you have to do what the developer I work with calls horrible hacks, you know, to make these kinds of things work, because you're presenting a lot of text in UI web view and using JavaScript and asking that to do things perhaps it really wasn't designed to do. So I can talk a little bit about that if people have questions at the end. But there with the, you know, with the ability to present a lot of text, you then are presented with the challenge and the opportunity of kind of mixing text and images and knowing how big to make the images so that it doesn't distract from the text reading experience, but then also, you know, building the functionality, you know, behind there so that you can then, you know, immerse yourself into the media that you're presenting. I mean, most of the iPad apps that I use personally are, you know, reading heavy, media heavy, and so that's a key design consideration to be thinking about. Of course, you have your zooming and panning. So that is a quick tour of the two apps that I'm using to really kind of inform my discussion. Any questions or comments? Yes, Dan.
It seems that you were, or whoever was developing these applications, were developing them as separate projects. My question is, would it be a good idea if there is an existing iPhone application to just try and port it to iPad? What happens to a regular iPhone application if it's just started on iPad the way it is? And how much work would that be versus writing application from scratch?
Right. Yeah. So the question is porting apps from iPhone to iPad, and how much work is it? Physically, obviously, you don't have to port any of the underlying code. I mean, it obviously works on both devices exactly the same as you would expect it to. And if you wanted to do a quick and dirty port, you can just basically, you know, take the nibs that you built for iPhone and relay them out for kind of the larger size screen to take advantage of that extra real estate. But I think, to be honest, and I was thinking about this a little bit before class, is that the way a user interacts with an iPhone app versus an iPad app is so radically different. You would want to think about, you know, presenting, you know, how you would present it differently with the screen real estate and the fact of, you know, the way people use the iPad, that it would probably end up being a significant amount of work, you know, design work to do it well, you know.
So you're suggesting reworking the presentation level while maybe maintaining the sort of model level.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can have it select. Basically, you can tell it to, you know, if it senses it's on an iPhone or iPod Touch, it'll pick, you know, this set of nibs, or if it's on an iPad, it'll pick another set of nibs, essentially, or view controllers. You can code that in pretty easily.
Okay, thanks.
Larry, one quick question about going back to the text-heavy view that you mentioned. Is accessibility, coding for the visually impaired, or did you do any? Did you have to worry about any of that stuff?
I haven't worried about that yet. That's a good question. I mean, we definitely do text, the ability to allow you to select larger font size. You know, but I honestly haven't looked at it past that. That's a good question, though. So a question for the audience was how I came up with the data for the My Energy Tips app, which is a great question. Specifically in that case, I'd happened to have been working in the utilities sector for about a year before I started my company, so I knew basically what the issues were, and then I built the data, you know, the data sets myself from research. But I think that's a good point, you know, just thinking about, you know, to go off on a little tangent, thinking about developing your own apps. If I'd have to say, you know, I've had to split the level of effort between developing the content, like the pictures and the text for masterpieces, and the underlying data for my energy tips. It was probably 60% of the effort was around the content, at least, you know, adding up all the hours that, that my colleagues and I spent on it, you know, between getting the content, licensing it, figuring out how it would work, and then the development was, you know, 40%. Still a significant amount of work, but it was way less than the actual content development.
Why were you using a UI WebView for the text? Is that the best alternative? Is there anything between a label and a UI WebView? Like, is there just a static text field?
Right. I'm going to go off a little off track here because I think it is a very interesting question. And the reason why you have to use the UI web view is that the text view and label views, text field and label views, you can't really do any formatting in them of the text. I mean, it's just you're just presenting the text, and you can format the whole block of text at once. With the UI web view, you can use HTML, but perhaps more interestingly, you can start to deploy JavaScript routines and JavaScript libraries against that. Again, he's asking, could you do heavy text formatting in UI labels or text fields? And I think you can do some, but not nearly as much as what you would want for a fully formatted document. I'm going to come back to that because I think that's a very interesting topic. But let me. Any other questions? Is it easy to put audio and video into iPhone and iPad apps? And the answer is yes. So like I said, I wanted to kind of summarize, and I think I mentioned a number of these topics when I was going through the demos, but these really are the five major themes of the difference between, you know, building UIs for the iPhone versus iPad. And it's the concept of, you know, a single focus element, you know, one thing at a time on a screen, lots of navigation around that to help you get to the right screen, versus the ability to have, you know, three or four elements simultaneously on the iPad screen and really taking advantage of that real estate. So kind of following along with that is that, you know, most iPhone apps, at least the ones that I deal with, are, you know, table and tabs. So pretty much using, you know, the Apple design characteristic to do that. While, you know, the iPad is pretty much open season. I find very few iPad apps, you know, good ones use the kind of the out-of-the-box Apple, you know, like the split view, for example. I mean, you'll certainly use it, but it won't be like a foundation for, you know, apps that, you know, have a lot of content in them, for example. The third point here, alerts versus object state. I kind of hinted on that a little bit. iPhone apps, I found, have a lot of alerts to tell the user what's going on the iPad. I find them incredibly annoying, you know, just kind of getting in the way of whatever you're reading or watching or doing. So I try to do more work with object state, as I mentioned, those buttons changing state to kind of communicate back to the user, and try to keep alerts to a minimum, and certainly to keep modal alerts that, you know, basically force action down to an absolute minimum. Next point here, and I hinted at it a little bit. Actually, I didn't hint at this one at all. The modals that I've seen in iPad apps allow you to do a lot more, right? So it's not just a quick telling you what's going on or begging for a piece of information. It's like it opens it up, and it's something that you're going to spend a lot more time in, whether it's like drilling down into a specific kind of content, reading some extra information about a game, for example, or looking at media that's related to what you're reading. So modals become, you know, more about communication as opposed to alerts or input gathering for the iPad. And then the last point is just thinking about like how your users actually use iPhone versus iPad. As I mentioned, iPhone is very much thumbs oriented. There have been some very good talks by a number of folks in the Boston area, like Barcamp and others, talking about how to design for thumbs, you know, and think about whether your users are going to be right-handed or left-handed where you put buttons, versus using fingers and swiping gestures and the other ones that we're familiar with from class for the iPad. And it just comes, you know, from nature of the way you're actually using the device. You know, iPhone more on the go, iPad more sitting down. Yes?
Is there a stylus that comes with the iPad?
Is there a stylus that comes with the iPad? It does not, but you can buy them. And you have to have it has to be, it's a special kind of stylus because the screen responds to the electrostatic energy in your finger or your, it has to be a living, I guess it has to be living, I don't know, but the finger doesn't touch it. So if you tap an iPad with your pen, it doesn't do anything. So they have special styluses that overcome that. In fact, JP has one. Do a lot of people use styluses for their apps? The answer is no. I've seen a number of apps that have tried to do handwriting, you know, handwriting recognition or drawing or note-taking. You should try them. I mean, my personal opinion is they're very difficult to use because it's just not designed to do fine point drawing. I mean, there probably are good apps out there. The ones I've seen, I've tried and, you know, gone back to the regular pen and paper pretty quickly. Okay. Any other questions? All right, so, okay, Hangman for the iPad. So I wanted to do some actual coding, as I mentioned earlier. So what I did is I built my take on Hangman for the iPad view. And I tried to incorporate some of the, you know, differences or best practices that I had mentioned earlier in my talk. So I'm going to talk about how I used images to communicate information, buttons with state. I have a popover example instead of the flip side view. I have a modal, a rich modal that has some information in it, and then rotation. To be honest, I apologize. I ran out of time and didn't actually get to rotation, but that, it's actually pretty simple, just simple to implement. Just takes some time. Okay. Let me see if I can get Xcode up. Okay. Here we go. Can you guys see that all right? Okay, so this is my main nib file for the Hangman view controller. And, you know, so I immediately thought that, you know, given that most people play Hangman in a notebook, right, I thought like a notebook theme would be pretty appropriate. So to be honest, I have a scanner and a piece of paper, and I crumpled it up and scanned it and put this image behind it. I made some other handmade buttons that you'll see in a minute to try to give kind of a feel for, you know, kind of a notebook, you know, back of the notebook version of Hangman. I could have gone crazier here and done like handwritten buttons or had them, but I just honestly didn't have the time. But that'd be my next step. Because that's how I'd play with my kids, would be to write out all the letters in a row like this, and then, you know, kind of play it along with them. And so pretty much, so we talked about the buttons. These are just buttons, and then I put a background image in each one of them to indicate that it's available. Button gray is that image. I made these myself in Photoshop. It took only a few moments. A note here, you find yourself kind of frustrated, or at least I did, with the state of button, the native buttons in iOS. I mean, basically you can have a white button, I think you can have a blue button, but there's very little that you can, some primary color buttons, there's very little you can actually do with it out of the box. There's not, you know, there's no CSS work that you can do with it. So I find you end up spending a lot of time in Photoshop, you know, kind of building your own background images to make the UI look less, you know, well, more professional, right? And that was kind of surprising to me, that how little you could do with the button backgrounds. I don't know, JP, if you found any different, but it was quite frankly very frustrating to me as a designer that you couldn't do this stuff natively. I have also a button red state and a button green, and we'll see how that works there. I have a couple UI image views on this on here, and then a couple buttons at the bottom here that I had put my handwritten images for new and settings. So I don't know, just having a little bit of fun, a little bit of fun with this to try to make it look like a notebook. So let's take a look at what this looks like. I'm going to do some more code. Let's take a look at the code that executes that behind the scenes. So I have my Hangman view controller. I did the same approach to the buttons that David did in the ATM example, where I just have a single button and a single button sensing class, and it's connected to all 26 letters. Then I have my other buttons. And other UL labels here. It's all pretty straightforward. In the H file too, the header file, one of the other items I added to this to give more user feedback was sound feedback. And as per, Tim, I think it was your question, it's really quite easy. I have a singleton class called EPS Sound Player, standalone object that does the work of actually setting up the details about how to actually play the sound on that particular machine, and then you just layer in the specific specific sounds into that class. So I have a method in here called play sound with name, and then a play right answer sound and a play left answer sound, and then the implementation file of that has a couple methods that basically just hook up, this particular app with the sound playing apparatus in the iPad. To be honest, I'm not exactly sure of exactly what it's doing, but this is a fairly standard example, and you can just—it's on the web. You can import it into your projects, and it should work. It will work right out of the box. And then, in terms of the actual sounds, I have them in as WAV files. You can have MP4s in there as well. There are a lot of very good sound libraries out on the internet. Actually, there's millions of sounds, and the hardest part is actually finding the ones that you like and that fit into your application. And then once you find them, then they're a couple bucks each, and you have kind of unlimited rights to use them within a specific app. So another kind of learning is that looking for the right content, took and was far more costly than actually figuring out how to make it work. In the app. Yes?
Larry, I may have missed something by coming in late, but for this demo, did you start off with a Windows-based app, or which app did you select as a template for adding in your controllers?
View-based app. What kind of template did I start with? I started with a view-based app, and then built from there. So it has the main window, just gets set, and then I start layering views. In this case, I have two views. I just put one view on top of the other, on top of the window. And I can show how that fits together in the nib if you like.
For the iPad app, have you found that it's easier for you or gives you more freedom to start off with a window-based app and then just add different controllers to it? Or do you find the templates to be sufficient?
So the question is, what do I find it easier to start out with a view-based or a window-based? I always start with a view-based just to have that first... the first set of links set up automatically. Okay, so in this code, as I mentioned, one note here: just watch your import statements. I've been doing this for a little while, and I still forget to import the right header file, so you end up getting in trouble there. But in this case, I just instantiated a version of the sound player. We'll see how that's called later. And then I'm not going to go through this right now. The code that I used, and I'm going to show you to do the state, that's what I'm going to spend a little bit of time on. The state button is right here. So as you can see, I'm basically testing, doing a quick test for if the input is correct. For those of you who are following along in the code, this is the submit letter method, which gets called every time a button gets played. And as you can see, it's quite easy to change the state programmatically of buttons. So this first little bit of an example is if it's wrong. And I apologize for those of you who complained about the algorithm. I hard-coded in the my algorithm for Hangman here just to focus more on the UI elements, but you could hook that in there. But if it doesn't fit, I call play wrong answer sound from my sound player class that I have instantiated in the header file. I set the background image to button red.ping, and then I set enable to no, right? And so that's all you have to do to change the state of a button from available to not available. So it's very easy to use that, you know, again, to communicate back what's actually happening to your users. And then on the flip side of that, if the answer is right, I do the exact opposite. Or no, I do a similar thing except for I set the button to green and it's selected and it's correct, and then play the right answer. And before I go too far, I'm going to show one more bit of code before we go to the demo, is what I then do to reset the state of all those buttons, which I thought I might have gotten myself into trouble with since I didn't put the buttons in an array. I just kind of lazily put them on the nib. You can actually, there's some pretty powerful abilities to search through the view collection by UI type. So in this case here, this is the new game, right, where I'm kind of resetting counts and things like that. But the most important piece of code in here is to go back and reset the state of all the buttons back to gray and available without having to kind of physically or, you know, keeping track of which button is in which state. What you can do is you can just iterate through all the subviews. So that's that four UI button B in self dot view dot subview. So I'm basically, it keeps track looking through everything. I double check to make sure I've got a button button item. For some reason it was picking up the labels. And then I change that state back to available and gray. And then I just did a little test to make sure I didn't pick up some of my other buttons that I have formatted in there that don't have any labels. So I was pleasantly surprised by how easy that was to go back through and kind of reset the state of all the buttons in my view using this ability to iterate through the view elements. Any questions or?
Will this only work for immediate children of the view that you are iterating?
I'm not sure. I think you probably go through any view, but I would have to double check. Because here I'm just calling self subviews. I mean, I'm sure I would be surprised if you couldn't go grab those other ones. All right, let's. Okay, so here's my Hangman game in action. There's no sound. Okay, here we go. So we have our sound and our feedback working together. And again, here, you know, the image up there. I hand drew seven images. Let's have a little fun. And then you can kind of go on. It's just swapping the image view based on. I named the files to correspond with the guest numbers. So then I just kind of format the call to the UI image view with the guest count plus PNG essentially to get that file to pop up. So that's the example that I had to kind of talk about button states and, you know, giving feedback through changing state of buttons plus other images as well. And there's just not enough space on the iPhone, you know, to do that. I mean, most of the UIs that I saw for the iPhone Hangman just, you know, had a line of letters and then, you know, maybe a count and maybe a list of letters. You probably could squeeze this on there, but you'd probably run out of real estate pretty quickly. Okay. Okay, so that is that. The next thing I want to talk about, too, is popovers. And then specifically within popovers, the concept of delegation, which is a very important topic in kind of iOS programming. And I'm not sure, do we spend any time on delegation in lecture or in section?
A little bit. There was a certain amount that the flip side view controller
right.
uses delegates and protocols.
Right. Okay, so not really, because delegation is a concept that I personally struggled with a little bit to figure out, but it's very important, especially when you have kind of the pop overview in iPad, because basically when you have the pop over, users, does anybody know what a pop overview is? Okay. This is the pop overview. So it's basically, well, it pops over and leaves the, and you can do things in it, but still leaves a lot of the functionality visible. And then most popovers, or many popovers, you can communicate between what you're doing there and what's happening there. So in this case, I'll just kind of give it away a little bit. I thought of this idea where you can turn like evil on and off. You know, if you want your kids to play, your game, you want to turn evil off so they don't get frustrated. And then for your friends, you turn evil back on. But you notice here in my popover, I can essentially control what's going on in the other view, and you do that through delegation. And fundamentally, it's a very simple concept. I'll try to draw on the board a little bit, if you don't mind. But basically, what you're doing is setting it up so that one view can kind of do something in another view. In a safe way. So you have your delegate, right, and then you have your other view. And so there are a couple of things you have to do in order to make this happen. And we have used delegates already for like the UI Alert View delegate. There are a couple ones that just kind of come out of the box with iOS, but you can make your own very easily to do things like this. And all you have to do is you have to say in the delegate what if this other class is going to be a delegate of this one, what does this class have to implement, right? So you basically say if it's going to be a delegate, it has to do A, right? And then you go into your other class and then you say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and implement A, right? And then therefore this class can now call into here and do things, call those methods directly. Does that make sense? Or
in the popover, which is the delegate, which is the?
Let's take a look at the code because I'm going to get confused. So let me make sure I get it right. So let's take a look here. So basically, to make this work, what I've done is in the settings view controller, I have stated, so that's the this is the popover view, that I'm going to say what somebody has to do in order to be my delegate. And in this case, it has to implement a method called game level selected, and that receives a string called game level. And you can put any number of methods in here that you want. But anything, this basically says, okay, unless there's game level selected in that class, I'm gonna complain. The Xcode's gonna complain, and you can't be my delegate. So once I do that, then in order to actually make that connection between this class and the calling class, I just have to instantiate a version of that delegate, giving it an ID here, settings delegate. And then in the class itself, the M class, all I have to do now to call that game level selected, which now actually exists over in this class over here, is go delegate method name, right? And so now I'm actually calling the method that's back in here, right? So it's pretty simple. But it allows that kind of like safe connection between classes. And then I'm going to go back to the wrong one. And then I'm going back to the here. This is now the main view controller. And I'm calling myself the settings delegate. I'm sorry, that's for the camera, that's not here. See, I've added settings delegate here, which is the same name that I put in my protocol back in this one. And then I've got a method in the M class that actually executes that method. And it's right up here. At the top. So that is the method that I'm calling from from the popover class. That's basically swapping the image in that UI image view that had the evil, not evil. Any questions or?
From the user interface standpoint, popover, how is it different from a pop-up window on the regular Can you move a popover?
No, I'm not sure. Can you move popovers? I'm sure there is a way to do it.
But I mean, the user, not programmatically, but a user.
Yeah, with a drag.
Popover to drag it to maybe see something behind it.
Oh yeah, you can drag objects. You could just treat that as an object and drag it. I don't know how you would do it exactly, but there.
So my question was, why did they call it popover rather than just sort of pop-up menu or pop-up object, you know, pop-up window? Is it just Apple's distinct way of calling things?
That's a good question. So why do they call it a popover? I have no idea. I could conjecture, but there's no... I mean, it's a window, basically.
Okay. Which you can just like touch and drag.
Right.
Can you have multiple popovers?
Can you have multiple popovers? Yes, you can have multiple popovers.
But then will the user be able to sort of switch between them? Or is it not a good design pattern? You know.
I haven't seen it. I believe you can have multiple popovers. I mean, the way we do it in this reading application that I'm going to show you if we have time is that when you select a new popover, the old one disappears. Because popover is for focus, right? You know, that's basically what you're trying to do with that element, is to, you know, focus the user's attention on, you know, either something they need to do or, you know, some extra drill down information that they're interested in, or it's part of the split view, which we'll take a look at in a second. All right, so that is the settings view, and it's an example of a popover. So if anybody, the reason why I included all this is if anybody is going to do their final project for an iPad, you know, feel free to leverage this code. These are the kind of the basic things that I've always found are, you know, helpful to kind of make an iPad app, you know, fully functional. Okay. All right, so. Let's see. I think I already did the demo. Oh, let me show a few more things. So let me talk a little bit about some things that you commonly do from these kind of setting popovers and talk about the behavior that you get. And I've also included the example code in here as well, because these are you know, should be part of every application. So we talked about the ability to control content in the view. You know, that's done through the delegation. Here I'm going to basically launch another view. This is this is just the email view you know, can provide some feedback. And the good thing about this, and the way it works just out of the box, is that this is basically launching a modal view over your work. So if you send the email, it actually brings you right back to where you started, which is a very, you know, as an app designer, you never want people to leave your app unless you can avoid it. So that's an example of doing that basically within a UI view, or UI view-like container, so that when you dismiss it, you come right back. This other example I have is a UI web view, and it's kind of the opposite. We kind of leave the app at this point, and then, you know, kind of the user is then off on their own, so we would have to kind of, you know, cancel out of that, and then go back into our app. So you want to try to avoid that. So, you know, theoretically, you should be launching that UI, that web view you should be launching it as a UI web view, right, as opposed to a browser launch to keep control.
So when the With popovers, the way you clear it is you just click anywhere else on the screen. Is that just sort of built in that it eats the first click? That if you clicked on one of those buttons, the letter buttons, while the popover was up, it wouldn't trigger the button, right? It just
I don't think so.
Automatically handles
yeah.
it for you, and then you do it again, and it would be fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the question was, how do you dismiss a popover? And you do it just by touching any part of the screen, and all the other elements are disabled behind the screen. Okay? We're doing pretty well on time. Okay, one more thing. Okay, so the last design element I'm going to talk about here is modal views. And as I mentioned, modal views... become very powerful and very rich, I believe, in the iPad because of the space that you have available to you. So you find yourself, or at least I found myself in a number of cases, using modal views to display long text. So that's an example that I have here, as well as images. You know, with the ability to kind of read about images. Here, how you make a modal is you just make a regular view. So you do file new Cocoa Touch object with a zip or nib file, and then you just start working working away in it. And the first thing you have to do is change the size to get there. So I won't do it right now. The standard size for modals is 540 by 620. But you can change that programmatically if you want. If you want smaller modals or bigger, that's just the size that comes out of the box. And then you build up your images. And in this case, in your text, in this case, I have combined a scroll view with a label so that I can get present a lot of text within that scroll view, and then have that person kind of move around. You can also put a UI web view. In there, if you want to do more kind of formatted text, you can put images, videos, whatever you want in there. And then also making sure that I have a large enough button on that screen so that it's easy, to know when to dismiss. Because I'm not sure if it dismisses on tap around, but we can test that. And the other thing I wanted to just share is a little trick on how to make modals or other kind of non-standard size boxes nicely formatted. And this is a trick that a graphics person I was working with on Masterpieces taught me, is basically how to get lines around the edge without having to draw those lines yourself in Photoshop. And basically what he's done is he's actually built, I don't know if you can see it here, corner elements, top left, top right, bottom right, bottom left, and then sent me a dot, which I then stretched in another element. I don't know if you can see it, but basically these are image views, and so now I can make have a nice Photoshop-like outline on any view with just these four or five elements, right? A stretch line, corner elements, and then I also have got a background there that's got some shading. So there are a lot of little tricks like that that can help you, reuse and leverage. I've probably broken this. The graphics elements that are time-consuming to build. Let me see if I can undo this. Oops.
There's no drawing tools in the interface builder. There's no solid squares.
I don't know. Oh, I broke it.
I think that the file is a revert to saved.
Thank you. Okay. So let's take a look at this. And I don't have to restart it. Okay. So here. So let's take a look now at what the modal view looks like. I am going to actually win this game now. Hopefully, if I could just, sorry, this is annoying. Okay, so sorry for those of you who went to Harvard, but the answer is bulldogs. So there we go. And there you have Had that modal that I talked about. We had the nice kind of lines around the edges to kind of get the attention in here. Then we can scroll. I think there's more I have to do here, but you can have it scroll so that you can read a lot of text without it kind of flopping around like that. And as I mentioned, you can put a lot of stuff in this, or a lot of content in this modal. Let's see what happens. Yeah, it's not letting you tap out of here behind the screen. So this modal forces you to have a dismiss key. And here, in most cases, you would have a couple of options, like, do you want to play the next game? Do you want to accept this? Do you want to decline it? In this case, I just have that. Okay, so that is it for that. We'll show you what happens when you get them all wrong. There you go, and I put a little timer in there to automatically refresh it. So
multiple delegates in the angle brackets, or?
Yeah, you just put delegate comma delegate comma delegate comma. Can you have multiple delegates per class? And the answer is yes. You just comma separate them in the brackets. What else? Okay, so rotation. Like I said, I didn't do rotation. But basically, there are two things you would have to do in order to make rotation work. Well, the first thing I did is I turned rotation off so that at least it doesn't mess up the game when you rotate. But what you would do, there are two ways to do it. One is you would just have a separate nib file that you'd laid out for landscape, and then on view did rotate, you would say if portrait, you know, load with nib. You know, portrait, and if it's landscape, you would load it your landscape nib. So that's kind of the chainsaw approach. Most people will redraw them in that method, and you get a lot more control over that by redrawing it. So that is Hangman for iPad. Any questions, comments? Is it interesting? Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Is it because you created your own buttons, so you couldn't let the iOS handle switching to landscape mode? Is that why?
No. Basically, what happens right now, so say if I were to go back into the code and turn...
And allow for rotation.
Yeah, this is what happens. Personally, I'm of two minds about whether, you know, how important rotation is. You know, the Apple guidelines say that it must support rotation. I think most apps, there's a better way to orient it or not. So here, you just change that to yes. Here we go. Okay, so here's what happens when if you don't handle it. It just basically keeps that in the row and leaves space off. So you need to we need to stretch the background, move the buttons. It might actually lay out better, to be honest, in landscape. But if you were doing this programmatically, you would put the buttons in a table, and then just change the way you handle row and section count. Depending on whether you're in portrait or landscape, that's the easiest way to handle kind of reorienting lots of objects on a view through rotations. Okay.
How does the built-in keyboard look on the MacBook? Is it different from the iPhones when you are editing standard text field and it shows the keyboard?
Yes.
Is it different? Does it have more keys than on the iPhone?
No.
Does it take?
It's the same. Let me show it to you. Because that's actually a very good question. Because designing for the keyboard is another thought that you have to do. Okay, so I'm going to show. We're talking about keyboards here. In this case, I'll show how the keyboard works. This is your standard. this is the way it standardly works. So most, you know, to my point earlier about like some views just work better one way or the other. You know, when you're asking the user to enter lots of text, landscape is the best way because you can actually type on this. It's not perfect, but it's better. Where when you go to portrait, you can see that the keyboard is much smaller, and I personally find it difficult to type a lot in there. So in fact, in this other app we're building, which is transferring a textbook to an iPad app, we're forcing text entry on landscape for that very reason, because we want people to type, you know, effectively, because they'll be answering, you know, questions. Okay. All right. Okay, we've got about 15 minutes left. There are three other things that I wanted to talk about. I'm not going to show the slide. I'm just going to make sure I've got it in my mind. And I'm going to use a different app to an app that's actually kind of in the process of building. So it's not perfect yet, but I think it illustrates some of the concepts pretty nicely. And that's, you know, there are two views that I find we end up using quite a bit deeper into the application. The split view, which I think you're familiar with the template. Just a note of warning, the template split view that comes with the Xcode templates only works if that's the first view that you're looking at. If you want to have a split view deeper into your navigational structure, you've got to build one from scratch. And there's tons of examples out there, but you can't take that split view and then build views on top of it or instantiate that view later on in your app. That was surprising to me to learn that. Actually wasted a lot of time trying to do it a couple of months ago. But split view is very, very powerful. But I find that it works best like deeper into the app, and I'll show you why. Okay, so this is a textbook app that we're building, and I apologize that you still can't see it. But basically, it's a text-heavy app, but there's also a lot of other kind of navigational functionality that you do before you would get to this spot. So we do use a split view here. Which, as you can hopefully see, this is about sexual selection in evolution. So, as you can see, it's very helpful for kind of navigating quickly through content. But we're not using this as the primary way to navigate. The user will be presented with a number of other choices, whether they want to do assessments or whether they want to read. And so we only use the split view kind of after the user has made a few choices about what they want to do, which I found is a pretty common design pattern. And you can see here basically what the split view is a table and a content view in landscape, and then in portrait mode it leverages the popover functionality, but then also like we showed in the other example, communicating between the popover view and the content view. So, you know, split views are important. There's something to get good at thinking about when you're thinking about how to kind of present content structured in a potentially good structured way. How about that for tripping over some words? Okay. The next thing I just wanted to mention, and I've mentioned it a couple times, is the kind of the power of the UI web view, which is something that we really haven't covered in class, and I don't think we covered it last year either. But I've been honestly surprised about how much work we do inside UI web view for the express purpose of getting formatting, and then some gestures that you might have thought would come out of the box from Apple, but actually don't. So this is an HTML, HTML in a UI web view, and what the view controller is doing is similar to a lot of web-based apps, is taking a set header and a set of JavaScript links, and then sticking a bunch of content in the middle with tags in it, and then sticking on the closing tags, and then presenting it in the view. So that's how we get this kind of formatting of text, you know, the lines and the bolding. And then we also then use JavaScript actually to manage the paging functionality. So it's actually quite a bit of work to get, you know, a page turning motion like that. Most UI web views, and in fact a lot of the apps out there actually use more focus on scrolling through content. We wanted to go through for more of a book feel here because it's a textbook. And then so it's the JavaScript that's handling kind of counting up the number of characters on that particular web page, putting the breaks in, and then allowing the controller to listen for gestures for, you know, page turn and page back. So we were able to do that with JavaScript in the web view. And actually a lot of very good libraries out there that help you. One we're using out of the box, generated, built by a gentleman in England, is called Rangy, which allows you to start to handle highlighting. Highlighting functions. So that's basically a JavaScript function that we reference from the UI view that changes the format of that text. We're having it updated a little bit to handle some of the peculiarities of UI web view for mobile Safari. But again, it's very powerful that you can bring those libraries into play. The other thing we're doing too here, using JavaScript and JavaScript is doing popovers. So you asked, there's a question about, can you do more than one? So we have different size popovers, you know, that are either citations or glossary terms, and then have it so that, you know, you can, there are obviously many points where you can start, but we only do one at a time, I think, for that focus area. So sorry, I don't have any code to show you. It's quite involved behind the scenes, but you know if you want to ever do anything like that, you know, I'd be happy to talk further and share with you how we actually did it. That is pretty much it. Oh, one other just design. A lot of apps are coming out these days that have ribbons along the bottom, so we've incorporated that. This is actually pretty easy to do. This is just another view, a view that you can pop over, similar to the popover that we talked before, and then you can have, it can keep track of, it's actually pretty, controller is actually pretty good at keeping track of where, of which view controller the gesture is going against, so you can have, you know, functionality in both panes, so to speak. And you see, like, the New York Times app is doing this, and a bunch of others that have started to do this, and I found it a very powerful way of, you know, kind of helping the user navigate through, you know, maybe not a chapter structure, but say, you know, images or glossary terms or what have you. So that is about, that's everything I've got for prepared remarks. Are there any questions or anything else you want me to go into?
The ribbon is the JavaScript library?
No, the ribbon, that's just the UI view. Yeah, it's the UI view. This is a regular view controller.
Well, in your work, have you or your developers ever found it useful to switch to HTML5 rather than writing native stuff?
That's so the question is HTML5, you know, versus native apps. That is a really big question. There are a couple reasons why we didn't do it, you know, aren't doing these things in HTML5, and the ones you would think of, which is the, you know, requiring the internet connection, you know, the internet connectivity in order to use the app. These apps that we have to be building are very, you know, designed to be used, you know, sitting down, you know, in, you know, either for studying or for entertainment purposes, and, you know, quite often, you know, that doesn't involve being close to an internet connection. So we thought that was immediately a non-starter. And, you know, from a performance perspective, you know, there's some other art-based applications that are in HTML5, and the load times, even when you are connected to the internet, were just unacceptable to get the images down. And you get, you know, when I was using them, I was getting frustrated. So I think the combination of, you know, kind of availability and performance really, you know, sidetracks a number of cases. And then, you know, to be perfectly honest, you know, all that the app store provides around kind of billing and payments and, you know, version control and things like that is, you know, makes it a lot easier as a publisher to manage your app.
You rely on the infrastructure.
Yeah. Yes. Do you HTML form? So the question is, you know, are we actually going to the internet with UI WebView? And the answer is no. You know, that's locally generated. We have the files basically in XML chunks, right? You know, that have some of the HTML formatting in them, and then we just, you know, stick the header and the footer on and push it out to the UI WebView. Any other questions, comments? All right, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your attention.